Welcome to Gamer Heroes, a Heroes Podcast Network production. Each episode, we discuss the latest gaming news, and then bring on a guest or two for an in-depth discussion on specific games, franchises, and more. It's game time.
Greetings, programs, and welcome to Gamer Heroes. I am your host, Derek. This is our first big full episode back in action after a little four-month hiatus. Thank you for joining us and joining me to talk about video games. I have two guests that I'll be bringing on the show here in just a little bit, Morgan and Zach, and we will be discussing the BioShock Collection. Why the BioShock Collection, you may ask? Well, it's actually coming to Nintendo Switch later this month on May 29th, and we thought this would be a good time to talk about it, discuss the franchise, the game. There will be spoilers involved there, so if you haven't played those games, you know, just be wary of that as we go through that interview process, that there will be spoilers. But we talk about the whole trilogy, DLC included, so that'll be a fun conversation here coming up. Before we do that, this is kind of our introductory section of the podcast I've got together. It'll be news and info, things I'm doing. First off, let's talk about things I'm playing right now real quick. Two games I want to talk about. The first is called Moving Out. Moving Out is a new game that is basically the moving version of Overcooked. If you've played the Overcooked games, they're great co-op games that have to do with how to cook various dishes, and you serve them, and there's time constraints, kind of a resource management timing kind of thing. This is a very similar style, except that you are packing and moving objects from houses and things like that. It's very tongue-in-cheek, a little sarcastic and funny and lighthearted and silly at times for sure, and I've really enjoyed it. My wife and I have been playing it. It's available on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Steam, Xbox One. In fact, we started playing it because it's on Game Pass. It's on Xbox Game Pass. So it was, you know, part of that. And I already pay for Game Pass. So there you go. And so if you're looking for some couch co-op out there, definitely recommend checking it out if you are looking for couch co-op action. It is available now to you. I'm also, I just started playing a game called Lonely Mountains Downhill, and this is published by Thunderful, which includes such developing brands as Image and Form, which is a favorite of mine. Image and Form has brought you the SteamWorld franchise, so SteamWorld Dig, SteamWorld Dig 2, SteamWorld Heist, SteamWorld Quest. I love these games. I've reviewed, I think, all four of them here on the Heroes Podcast Network. You can go to heroespodcast.com and find them. I've talked about them on previous episodes way back when. I might even put some of that in the show notes. We'll see. Anyway, Lonely Mountains Downhill. I'm just going to read a little excerpt for you. Lonely Mountains Downhill is a mountain biking game where it's just you and your bike with the objective of successfully getting downhill. There are challenges to complete which unlock new trails, mountains, and customization options, and leaderboards for those who want to master the mountain's terrain and reach the base with the fastest possible time. Players can also take their time and explore the mountains to find hidden rest areas. I just started playing it. Like I said, I've got a couple hours into it. It's a cute game. The graphics are very bright and colorful, but relatively basic in design. Lots of polygons, right? The track is quite long and difficult. I really had a hard time completing the first track. You really have to take it slow and think things through and plan your route. But I'm going to play through this a little bit more, and I'm going to come back with a review. I'm going to write a review for the site and probably talk about that on here. So keep your eyes open for that. The game is available now. The reason I'm reviewing it is it's just coming to Switch. And so I got a review code for that, so I could check it out on Switch. So more will be coming there. Okay, let's move on to the news segments happening in the world of gaming. So of course, the rumors are still churning that Blizzard will in fact put out some kind of Diablo 2 remaster this year in 2020. At this point, look, I want to believe those rumors just like you do, but I'm wondering if that's why these rumors exist. It's just because so many of us would like to see that happen. I play Diablo 3 all the time. I'm playing through it again on PS4 for the who knows how many times. And it would be great to have Diablo 2 on modern consoles or with modern graphics. So, you know, who knows? There's an IGN article out about it. They cite, quote, sources close to the studio. I mean, who knows? It's saying that Vicarious Visions may be involved in the project. Vicarious, of course, is the home of the Crash Bandicoot franchise, which includes that new Insane trilogy that came out not too long ago and the Nitro-Fueled Racing game. So, you know, they've done some cool stuff. Who knows if this is true? Take it with a grain of salt, but keep your ears open, keep your eyes open. Maybe we will finally see Diablo 2 return in a remastered format. Moving on to the world of Xbox. So Microsoft has started these Xbox events that they're hosting, and this last one showed a bunch of third-party titles. There's one particular feature on the X series that's coming out that I just wanted to cover real quick because I think it's not particularly clear for a lot of people. It's called Smart Delivery. So Microsoft and the Xbox division are marketing Smart Delivery as a feature where if you buy a game on the current gen, so Xbox One, Xbox One S, or Xbox One X, if you purchase that game for that generation of console, when you get your X series and the game releases on X series, you will automatically be able to play it on X series. You will not have to purchase it again. It'll just move over. This is pretty cool. It's kind of a strange concept, of course, because, you know, the Xbox One was backwards compatible to a lot of 360 games. And the X series will be backwards compatible to a lot of Xbox One games. But this is a very specific feature. We do know that some of the titles that are included now will include the new Assassin's Creed Valhalla that's been announced. We know that Cyberpunk 2077 will use the feature as well. The Yakuza Like a Dragon, Dirt 5, just to name a few, are all going to support this new feature. There's, of course, going to be complications. EA, for example, is supporting the feature for Madden 21. However, you have to redeem your upgraded version of the game by March 31st, 2021. The game comes out, of course, this year. It's always the name of the year is always one ahead, kind of like a car. So if you buy that, then, you know, you got to kind of think about when you're going to redeem that upgrade. You have to think about when you're getting that X series. So if you're not getting the X series at launch in November, presumably, if you don't get it by March, then you're not going to be able to upgrade specifically for Madden 12. So it's a little complicated, but that's the feature and that's what it does. Presumably Halo Infinite and any first party titles are supposed to support this feature. First party, of course, includes like over a dozen studios now, as well as Microsoft went through a pretty large acquisition project for their Xbox division. Okay, let's get a little weird. All right, let's do it. Let's get weird. So Cyberpunk 2077 is shaping up to be a crazy game. The graphics are incredibly intense and gorgeous. Keanu Reeves is involved. It's getting all of these very hard, mature ratings in various countries. There will be a lot of violence. There will be a lot of nudity. So yes, this is an adult game. However, PC Gamer has an interesting article out about how the game will have customizable genitalia. And that is a very interesting concept because we know very little about that at this point. What exactly will that mean? According to the ESRB's rating summary, quote, some locations depict mutilated corpses with open chest cavities and or exposed organs / entrails. During one quest, players assist a character by hammering nails through his hands and feet. Screaming sounds and blood effects accompany the scene. So there's your R rating, right? There's your mature rating for this video game. It is incredibly intense. This is definitely adult content. Later on, however, it says, quote, players can select a gender and customize their character. Customization can include depictions of breasts, buttocks, and genitalia, as well as various sizes and combinations of genitals. That's a very interesting statement, right? Obviously, size, that's fairly intuitive. But combinations, that's an interesting point. What is that going to entail? What's that going to look like? Are these going to be checkboxes? Or are there going to be actual visual representations of this that you can see? This certainly remains to be seen. However, between both those chunks of the summary and the rest of this article here by PC Gamer, I just have to say that this is probably the most adult game that I've ever going to be playing, right? I've played a lot of video games in my day, but it's usually just violence that's really involved, like Gears of War or BioShock or The Last of Us. And so this heavy nudity and even down to the genitalia is kind of a new concept for gaming for me. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. I'll let you know as I learn more about it. Okay. Well, that's my introductory section here on this week's episode. We're going to move on now to the interview process, where I'm going to bring on Morgan and Zach, and we're going to talk BioShock. So just a little bit of overview for the franchise in a non-spoiler way. The BioShock first game was released way back in August of 2007, during the 360 PS3 era. It was also released on PC. And that game takes place in 1960 in a city called Rapture that's built under the water. The second game came out in February of 2010 and takes place a little bit later in 1968. You're still in Rapture as a different character. Then you have BioShock Infinite, which is a very, very different game. This came out in March of 2013, still on the PS3 and 360 era, and it takes place actually prior in 1912, but this is in the floating city of Columbia up in the sky. You play another character in this one. These games have very specific mechanics and tones and styles and a philosophical, moral, ethical message throughout. They are heavy duty games. There's a lot of violence in them. There are some difficult scenes depending on your personal background and things of that nature. So I definitely recommend, if you are sensitive to violence, that you look into that a little bit before you play these games, if you haven't played them. But we will be talking about the BioShock Collection, which was a collection of remastered versions of these games released later on. That's what I played. It's available right now on PS4, PC, Xbox One, things like that. If you have PS Plus, it's been given away multiple times on PS Plus as one of the free monthly games, so you can check that out if you're lucky. And that's going to be it for me here. I'm going to go ahead and we'll take a short break. And when we come back, I will have Morgan and Zach on to talk BioShock. Catch you here in a minute. All right. Hey, everybody. I am back. I have my two guests with me this week. First time on the show, Morgan Simone. Morgan, say hi to everybody.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. And then for you old timers out there, you may or may not remember Zach's story. Hi, Zach.
Hey, it's me again. It's been a while on this show, at least.
Zach started the show with me way back when, and he's been on the Red Shirts and Runabout show here on the HPN.
Back when the world was new.
Back when the world was new. But we are, of course, here to talk about BioShock, the BioShock Collection, and so forth. Before we do that, I thought I'd give you each kind of a chance to introduce yourselves, maybe talk a little bit about why you wanted to talk about this game or the first time that you played these games. And Morgan, since you're the first time guest,
oh God,
I thought you should go first.
Okay, wow, it's me. Well, my name is Morgan. I'm a model and a cosplayer, because your boy's a nerd. And BioShock, the series, has always been a huge, like, inspiration and stress relief of mine. I remember, like, I first played it years ago. I can't even remember. I think it was, like, 7 years ago, maybe, the first one. No, it was longer than that. I was in high school, forever ago. And I remember being so impressed by, like, the subtle horror elements in it, because I am very spooky and I love, like, creepy things all the time. So I remember my ex was playing it when I was, like, in high school, middle school, maybe. I don't know.
But she's so much younger than us, Zach.
I know. I feel old. I feel old now.
I'm a small bean. And I remember they had, like, the ghosts and, like, the creepy flickering lights and, like, the sections that were strictly horror. And I had never seen an action game do that, really, that didn't advertise, that didn't lead with horror elements. It just kind of snuck it in there, and it was super surprising. And ever since then, I was hooked. So, yeah, that's why I really want to talk about it, because it's my favorite game series of all time.
Fair enough. All right. Well, Zach, what about you?
This is also one of my favorite game series of all time. The only thing I have to compare it to is I feel like this franchise is for horror what the Half-Life series is for sci-fi. And that is like an engaging first-person shooter that is more than just a, you know, an old-time shoot 'em up. Like there's a story and there's some subtleties and nuance to follow, and it's a very visually told story. And yeah, I remember the first time playing the original game. I was in college, so a little bit older.
Oh man,
I know. And I remember being really drawn in, not just to the gameplay. In fact, less about the gameplay. I we'll talk more about this later. But I enjoy the gameplay. But I think what really hooks me with BioShock is the story and the universe and the visual way in which they pull you in. It's almost like a interactive novel, these games, and that's really what makes me excited about them.
Fair. So for me, I am very new to this franchise. I actually just played all three of them in the last 5 months.
Oh my goodness.
I've bought them on Steam, you know, like you do, and then didn't touch them for years because there was some Steam summer sale or some nonsense. And they just sat there and got updated from time to time. And then, you know, PlayStation gave it out, the collection, as the PSN Plus, and I snagged that thinking I'll play that someday, and then didn't. And I finally just decided to sit down and do it. So I started playing them in December and burned through them pretty quick. I finished them in March, if I remember correctly. March. I finished them in March. So played through them really quick, including the DLC, which was cool. And yeah, so it's still pretty fresh in my head. And I have kind of a different perspective because I didn't touch them until I was basically 33. After the original, you know, the original came out in 07, so it was a pretty big
Oh my gosh, was it 07?
Yeah. That's when the first one came out. Yeah.
Oh, I was in seventh grade.
Yeah, no. I
was a sophomore. Derek and I were sophomores in college.
Oh no. Oh, no,
that's right, because you were back a year. Well,
no, I wasn't back a year. No. See, I had already been academically dismissed, my friends.
Right.
I was working full time at TGI Fridays.
Nice. At the time,
and had not gone back to school quite yet. So that
no
was
no shame. No shame.
That's what I
haven't gotten back to school yet.
But you know, whatever. So, okay. So let's talk one more question that I have before we dive into it is, do you have a favorite of the three? And if you do, which one is it?
I don't know. Like Infinite is outstanding. However, I'm really close to the original because it was the first, but man, they really killed it with Infinite. I remember the first time I played it, because it was so long. It was like 4 or 5 years after, maybe more, from the second one, which we kind of don't talk about. But
that's hurtful. We will talk about it.
We will.
But I remember everything was different. And at first, I didn't really like the difference, the complete shift, but it just... really, I just fell in love with the aesthetic and the slow psychological horror that BioShock is great at. That just kind of over time just sinks, like really sinks its teeth into you. And just that story that they have for Infinite and how it ties it all into, especially in the DLCs, how it ties it into the greater world of BioShock and back to Rapture. I just, chef's kiss. I just, it's so good. And plus my husband, Troy Baker's in it, so.
Of course. Yeah, Zach? No, I'm inclined to agree. And nothing will ever top that experience of playing the first game in its entirety and just, you know, enjoying that whole experience. And yet there were a lot of storytelling elements that I feel like were not as good about the first one, but Infinite really perfected. And I'm a huge fan of just Ken Levine in general as a storyteller, and I have a lot of respect for him and his craft. And yeah, if we're going to include DLC, I would have to say Infinite is my favorite, just because we do go back to Rapture. We do kind of pull full circle and we get a really complete story. You get to see Rapture before BioShock, the original, and then after the insanity occurs. So, yeah, like I hate picking a favorite because I enjoy all three of them, honestly, for different reasons. But the first, Infinite is definitely my go-to, I would say.
And that seems to be what the majority of people have been saying that I've talked to mm-hmm. about this. I think I'm definitely in the small group that actually thinks the second one is the best.
Really?
Yeah, you're wow. definitely the minority.
And I mean, I say that by also saying that none of them are bad, right? They're all great. Right. But yeah. The second one, and I think it's just a very personal situation that I think the story in the second one just is more relatable to me and more, I connect with it more than with either sure. of the other two, just from a narrative perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of what you were alluding to, Zach, I definitely think Infinite is improved by the DLC.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Burial at Sea. I think if you, before that DLC existed, I don't think Infinite has as strong of a message or as strong of an impact on the other BioShock games. But when you,
it's a little bit more ambiguous. Yeah.
But when you bring that in, you tie it all back together. Because like, I think what throws me off about Infinite is it's without the DLC, is it really a BioShock game?
See, I mean, I would say yes. I would say yes, because there's always a man in a lighthouse. And whereas, I don't know. And I do like, and that's the thing, like, when I think about the BioShock franchise, like Infinite was just like, how do you make a sequel? How do you follow up the original BioShock? And you go from this very Ayn Randian influenced city under the ocean where your creativity is your limit and man is just absolutely encouraged to give into their hedonistic and creative desires to the nth degree. And then Infinite is like the antithesis of that. Instead of a city under the ocean, you've got a city on the clouds, of course. And whereas BioShock plays a lot with shadows and darkness, you've got a lot of light and cloudiness and loftiness of this weird ideal in BioShock Infinite. And mind you, when BioShock Infinite came out, the Tea Party was still a thing. And so to see this video game reflecting, and not that they're not now, but it's, that's small fish. And then you can't talk about BioShock without discussing social political issues. And when BioShock Infinite came out, the Tea Party was still a big thing. So to see this like polar opposite of Rapture with Columbia, and Columbia has taken to the extreme this idea of marrying religion and state, and you've got this very cult-like, one of the most unnerving things for me in BioShock Infinite is you get into the city in the clouds and you've got these like monks basically praying to Father Washington and Father Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we've completely religiously romanticized the concept of American history. And that's something that was timely then. It's maybe more timely now in a lot of ways. But yeah, it was unnerving, and it was, I appreciated the dissonance. And so I would say, yeah, Infinite's definitely a BioShock game. It's just the photo negative of what we originally encountered.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Zach. I feel like BioShock, like I said earlier, hits on like the psychological horror within our society. Like the first one, like you said, is very roaring 20s. It's obviously stylistically and like the mentality of like we just overcame this huge great thing like the war or whatever, and now it's time to celebrate, it's time to just indulge to the max, it's time to take all of, oh gosh, what are they called, not the elixirs, not the vigors was Infinite, what is
Oh, the plasmids.
Plasmids, thank you. Time to take too much plasmids and get spliced and stuff like that. It's just all like excess in the first one. And then you see the downfall of that side in the second one. But for Infinite, it takes that 50s American dream. Everything's grand. Everyone's smiling. It's so beautiful, but you can't look beneath the surface. And it takes that element of the social class and the social turmoil that was painted over in gold, that everyone's like, don't look over there. This is all amazing. And you kind of get that. I mean, obviously the lottery and Infinite is the turning point where you start seeing how wrong everything is on purpose. But it really, and I really like that subtle shift, because when you're playing it, you're like, this is okay, what's wrong with this? Because instinctually playing a BioShock game, you know it's going to go wrong, but you don't know how. And that reveal of the lottery, either you pick this white man or you pick this black woman to stone to death, is insane. And you, it finally like drops a curtain and you realize you're dealing with like racism and like the, oh gosh, what is the word? The uprising of like socialism. And it's just so perfectly wrapped up. And therefore I think, like you said, Zach, it is a BioShock game, because they take the beautiful parts of society and history and they shine like a really realistic light on it, to be like, look at the things that are still wrong with our world, but they also obviously like fantasize it and make it more appealing and make it more playable for people who don't like a lot of social narratives in their games. And I just, it's just so amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to hear what Derek has to say, but just to piggyback on that real quick, I appreciate like how both these games are so similar and yet so different. And you've got in the first game, this is a very obviously creepy game up front, and yet at its core, there's some very like sentimental, heartfelt stuff. And that's both of the two Rapture games, really. Whereas BioShock Infinite starts out very sentimental and overly sappy, and then it slowly gets creepier, creepier, more so on a like a social, intellectual level. And ultimately, all of these games have a very intrinsic father-daughter dynamic throughout all. And I think ultimately BioShock boils down to that father-daughter dynamic throughout a number of fucked up social circumstances.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think there's the big difference in Infinite is in the first two, you play a good guy, right? But in Infinite, you're not really a good guy for a good chunk of that game. Booker's not a good person,
And he reminds you that often.
right? Like, no, maybe he's not the worst person, right? There are worse people there, but he's certainly not a good guy. Whereas, you know, Delta, I mean, Delta's doesn't really have much of a choice. Delta's just a good guy, right? And Jack, though, you're given that choice. So let's go back to the first game here a little bit. And this, of course, is where everything is originally built, right? So we get the big daddies, we get the little sisters, we get all of that. What was your strategy when you first played the game versus over time? Did you ever treat the little sisters differently? Did you get the good ending, or how did you approach the moral choice in the game?
It, I am extraordinarily empathic, and it definitely shows in my game style. If I ever have a choice between a good ending or a bad ending, or like a morality choice, I will always steer to like the quote unquote good path, because I just feel so bad. Every single game, yes, sometimes it's a lot more fun to play the bad guy. And you sometimes you get a lot more perks, like in Infamous Second Son. You get really great perks if you're the bad guy. However, I just feel so bad, and especially if they're these little children, and then when you like save them, they're just so cute, and you just want to save them. So it's really hard for me, and I think over time I tried to play the bad guy, but then I would slowly steer back because I would just feel too awful.
Well, and to your point, in BioShock, if you harvest the little sisters, you get more Adam.
Yeah.
You do.
Right? Which makes, theoretically, would make you more powerful.
Mm-hmm. But at what cost? Like, the scene where you have to, like, harvest them, that's gut-wrenching. I couldn't do it. I had to look it up on YouTube and decided that I couldn't do it. I'm with Morgan. Like, if there's a good choice or a bad choice, I can't do the bad choice. And I would like to be able to be a gamer who could, like, do that, but I can't. Like, I remember Knights of the Old Republic, the first one. I played through good because I was more comfortable with that. I enjoyed the game more. And I thought, okay, I'm going to replay this as bad. And I got like half an hour in, and there's this moment where there's like a group of kids bullying this hammerhead alien, like one of the ones from the Star Wars cantina. And he's like, oh, I'm just trying to get home to my life, mate. Will you protect me? And you've got a good choice or a bad choice. And I'm like, I can't do the bad thing. I cannot hurt you. Like, I'm way uncomfortable with this. And if I can't make this bad choice now, I'm not going to be able to make any bad choices later. So I turned off the game and I looked up the bad ending on YouTube. And I thought, okay, I'm glad I've seen that. And yet, I'm glad I didn't spend 40 hours of my life getting to that ending, because it's also depressing. And I did the same with BioShock. I looked up the sad ending, and I liked the happy ending. I liked that the game was a little bit more challenging, because you were doing maybe a more morally correct thing and protecting little sisters. And I played the first game before I was even a father. By the time I played BioShock Infinite, I had almost two children at the time. So
almost two children.
Almost two. Yes. Yes.
He was still building
the
second one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It was a work in progress.
Well, I mean, my now ex-wife was building the second one in utero when I played the second game. But yeah, like I appreciated the good ending. I felt like it was worth fighting for, and the good ending was just so good. Like, I appreciated that you had this guy who, you know, got sucked into this world, and then he chose this noble thing, and he didn't have anybody really, but then like he left with a family, like a sense of family, and these daughters like took care of him as he aged. And that was cool.
Yeah. And sorry, Derek.
You're fine. You're fine.
Yeah, like, I can't, it took me so long to see the bad ending, because, like, I just never played it, and I never thought about looking it up, because when I played the original BioShock, I just didn't realize that could be a thing to do. Now I'm like, yeah, I will search endings till I'm blue in the face for any game. But it's just, I feel so bad, and like some of the choices you have to make in a lot of moral-based games, like I have Red Dead Redemption 2, and I absolutely love it. And sometimes I'm like, I'm gonna shoot this person, and then I feel awful. And I'm like, oh, dang it. Like, that person's crying. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. So like, for me to play any game in a bad way, I feel like it comes at such a cost. And plus, I want to see my morality and my morals played out in the game and the character, and I want to see that good story as like BioShock, like the good endings are just so gorgeous and so heart-wrenching, and just like, wow, I really feel like I'm okay with this ending. I'm happy. Everyone's happy-ish because it's BioShock, so no one's like fully happy.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where like you can end the game and you can feel like you did the best without being like, ha ha, yeah, they harvested the little sisters, ha ha ha.
Right.
You know, like it never sits right with me.
The strength of this franchise is that it forces you to ask those moral questions and ask yourself what you feel comfortable with. And that's
absolutely,
that's why I call these interactive novels. Like, these are not like just video games where you can like turn off your brain and shoot them up for a minute. You can, but I feel like that's the wrong way to experience it, because ultimately at its core, like, these are games that like ask difficult questions and make you kind of wrestle with what you think and what you.
Well, you know, to kind of support all of that, the official canon ending is the good ending, right? Well,
exactly.
You know, so if you save the little sisters, well, you can harvest one little sister and still get the good ending. I looked it up
because
I was curious because I was nervous that like one time I'd accidentally hit the wrong button. Right. Yeah. And I was worried that if I did that, I would just ruin the whole game. And so I wanted to know, like, if that happens, should I start over? And I was like, no, you can do it. You can do it one time and you're still good. So I was like, okay. And I never ended up making the mistake, but yeah, I mean, and the Burial at Sea DLC for Infinite kind of brings all of that into full circle because Elizabeth is setting Jack up to rescue the little sisters.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the ending, is that he does rescue them.
So Derek, you've probably done more of the math than I have. It's more difficult. You don't get as much Adam out of the little sisters initially if you harvest them. And yet when you go through it, like all of us did, it sounds like, and you don't harvest them, every like third or fourth little sister, like you get a gift with extra Adam. And right. So like, does it eventually balance out or not? I don't know.
So the problem with really answering that is that there's too many options.
Right.
Because there's achievements for maxing out all of your upgrades and maxing out your plasmids and all this other stuff. And so there's so many different ways to play the game that I guarantee the three of us had different upgrade sets by the time we finished the game every time we've done it. Right.
Sure.
And so there's not really a way to know, because if you have more Adam, but you pick the wrong upgrades for your play style, you're going to have a harder time.
That's fair. But right. As far as like just strict like Adam, like do you end that up with the same amount of Adam? Yeah.
From the way I understood it, you would get more straight up Adam if you harvest all of the little sisters. But
sure.
Then the end of the game is harder for you though, because then they don't help you.
Right.
So there is that kind of balance as well, that they come out and they help you kill Fontaine at the end of the game. And they don't do that if you've been harvesting them, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
So they do try and balance that out. And I think really what's interesting there is that the first game provides really the biggest personal ask, the biggest question on the player of the trilogy. Because the other two games don't really change outcomes based on what you do.
Yeah, that's fair.
The first one does. The first one really does. The way it plays out in the climax of the story is based off of the decisions you made with the little sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like that you have control, because, you know, it's difficult playing a first person shooter and not having background to your character. Right.
Yeah.
You have famous franchises like Halo. You know, Master Chief just wakes up from cryo sleep and you're already in a gunfight. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the BioShock games have a similar situation with that, because Jack has no memory. You wake up in a plane crash. Delta, you woke up after more or less being dead for a few years. Right. And then in Infinite, you kind of have these weird flashback memories that you don't, even the character doesn't really understand.
Yeah. And I feel like that, I'm sorry, I cut you off, but I feel like in that way, Infinite definitely world builds the character more. And I feel like you kind of connect with Booker quicker because you have that background story. And so you can kind of like base his actions around what you think about Booker, whereas Jack and Delta, you're just, you know, there with them.
I think Booker's definitely helped by the presence of Elizabeth, because not only is she there for you to talk to, because you've always had somebody talking to you in the BioShock games, but she's there to interact with you, right? She's giving you medkits, she's giving you ammo, she's looking at you and you're looking at her and you're having personal conversations.
Catch.
Right.
Booker
talks a good amount in Infinite, whereas like Delta doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Jack doesn't really either.
Does Jack talk at all? Actually,
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't recall any lines that he has, and Delta certainly doesn't talk.
Yeah. I feel like if Jack had any lines at all, it was like at the very beginning and at the very end, like the cutscenes, not in the actual gameplay.
And so it's
he did say a few things, but that was it.
It's a different kind of framing for the character, because Booker is kind of is his own character that you are kind of moving around, versus Jack and Delta, they're just you.
Yeah. Well, and like, I know like Ken Levine had said, I believe if memory serves, that reading an interview that with Jack, it was an intentional choice, like to submerse you in the character, like not to give them any dialogue so that when you're playing it, you really feel that role. Mm-hmm. And so when you're interacting with Atlas, or when you're interacting with what's his name? The guy you hit with the golf club,
Andrew Ryan.
Thank you. when you're interacting with these guys, like you're doing so as yourself. Right. And it was to really submerse you into that. Whereas they were telling a different story in Infinite. And as a side note, Ken Levine was only involved in the first and third. BioShock 2 was 2K, one of their
2K Canadian games. Yeah.
It was some of their other studios. It was Australia, 2K Australia, 2K Marin, Arcane Studios, and Digital Extremes.
Yes.
And then 2K Boston also helped. So, and I mean, he was involved. Ken provided some input, but he wasn't like directly part of development for two. So we're kind of focusing a little bit more on the first one then. So this is like what builds the whole universe. This designs all the mechanics, what the weapons are going to be like, what the plasmids are going to be like, how Atom functions, and how the controls work. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any particular game mechanic that you really love out of this game? Because basically all three games have the same mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So is there an aspect, an ability, a weapon, a gameplay style, something that really stood out to you as something you enjoyed? So like, just for example, so most first person shooters, at least, you know, throughout video game history, allowed you to hold one weapon at a time. Dual wielding was a big deal, you know, when Halo 2 came out. Right. And, I'm still used to my shoulder buttons, the left and the right, doing very specific activities, right? I'm firing with one and I'm like aiming with the other, zooming in with the other. And having to use one side, one hand basically for my weapon and the other hand for my plasmid ability was a very kind of unique game mechanic for me. I found that really interesting. And I found it difficult for me to acclimate to it. It took me a while to stop making that mistake. I would have out a gun and I'd be like, okay, so I'm just like gonna aim in the zoom in a little bit, and I would fire a fireball blast by accident. Like, well, there goes the stealth I was gonna try for, right?
Yeah.
You know, or like I'll end up hitting the big daddy and piss it off and all of that. So are there any mechanics like that, something that's kind of unique to BioShock that really stood out to you?
I really enjoyed, like you said, how they kind of balance the weaponry with the plasmids and like the special abilities, because I think that was the first game that really had both instead of having just guns or just like magic, if you will. And so it was just really interesting. And I found myself, at first, I found myself playing more with the guns because it was something I was familiar with. I mean, everyone has played at that time, everyone played Call of Duty and Halo. So like it was a first-person shooter kind of mentality. But then I just really enjoyed being able to have a selection of, like, plasmids and the selection of the abilities and kind of altering your play style accordingly. So, like, if you had shock jockey, you could, and someone was walking in water, you could shock them and electrocute them. Or if you wanted to go the stealth route, you could do old man winter and freeze them and sneak up on them and just like smack them, and you didn't have to kill them necessarily. And it was, except for the big daddies, because yikes. And it was just something that I still find myself missing in newer games that I play. That's just, I just kind of like balance of the special abilities with weaponry. And I've noticed that especially since Infinite, more games have kind of experimented with that kind of stuff. So it's like you have a extreme focus, or you kind of pick up a certain ability, your character has some type of magic. And like, yes, games have always been like that, but I feel like since BioShock was such a huge success and people really liked kind of having those abilities with the weaponry, I just really, really enjoy being able to be like, oh, you know what? I don't have to save my ammo, so I'm just going to shock the heck out of this guy.
What about you, Zach?
Yeah. I would say in the first game especially, I absolutely use the electric plasmid quite a bit.
All the time.
Right. I mean, the game was really designed almost to punish you if you didn't, because there were a lot of times, because it's a city underwater and it's dilapidated at this point. Mm-hmm. So you come across many situations where there's a pool of splicers and it just makes sense to shock them. I also really enjoyed the technical aspect. I enjoyed being able to hack the little flying drone things. Mm-hmm. Those were very helpful, both as a distraction and as a little bit of extra damage. And also, I remember the first couple times you run into a Big Daddy in the first game, they're intimidating and you don't have what it takes to take one down. And so, like, the first time you're actually able to take a Big Daddy down, like, that was a big moment. And that requires a lot of firepower, but it also requires a mix of plasmids, whether you're, you know, throwing lightning at them to stun them in the water or not, or you're freezing them or whatever the case, you know, whatever it is you have at your disposal. You have to use a combination of things for the Big Daddies. And that was a very, like, by the end of the game, it's no big deal. You're like, okay, like, I'm going to fuck this Big Daddy up and I'm going to run away and I'm going to do a couple things and it's fine. But yeah, early game especially, relied heavily on the electric stuff and on the automation.
Whenever I encountered a Big Daddy, I would really like plan for it and I would set a bunch of traps.
Yes. Yes.
You know, all of the proximity mines and things like that to really prep for it. And you don't get to do that a lot in first-person shooters, especially older first-person shooters. And look, at the end of the day, the original BioShock is 13 years old now.
Oh my gosh.
You know, So the idea that I could like get a lay of the land, play some of these mines, get, you know, this and that ready, think, okay, well, he's going to go through that and then I'm going to shoot him with my grenade launcher and then I'm going to zap him with this and then I'm going to switch to this gun and kind of just have it ready to go like a sequence.
Those were intense battles. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they absolutely were. So that then brings me to the next topic then, which is when you move on to the second game, they had to ratchet things up a notch, right? So there's different kinds of Big Daddies now, but there's also the Big Sisters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the Big Sisters design. Ugh,
yeah.
To die for.
The fact that they were able to take the Big Daddy and make it creepier and more deadly at the same time was, I thought, really impressive. And I knew, absolutely, like, the prepare, a Big Sister is on her way or whatever. I'm like,
yes.
And I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, because I think one of the reasons I like the second one more is I felt strapped for resources far more often in the second game.
Yeah.
It's definitely harder. It's so much harder.
I felt like it really was. We're like, I'm like down to one bullet, or I'm out of ammo, or I'm down, you know, I'm out of plasmids.
Really smart about the way you're planting your mines, which, uh-huh, by the way, the mines in the second game, like, were so much better and so much more involved. I remember putting way more thought into the second game and how I was going to plant mines and where.
Yeah.
And I like that. It seemed more strategic. It seemed more edgy, you know, whereas like in the first game, don't get me wrong, there's some difficult parts to it. Right. And the Big Daddies are formidable, but I was never like stressed out. Whereas in the second game, anytime that the screen would, you know, do that little shutter thing when the Big Sister was on the way, I immediately was stressed out.
Yeah. Yeah, they're terrifying. And plus, it was just, like, I think the difficulty level ramped up intensely from the first game to the second game. Like, I remember playing it, and it took me so long because it was just so difficult, and I refused to, like, down the difficulty because I'm a gamer, so I'm gonna make it hard for me. And I would get so frustrated because the Big Sisters were so strong, and like you said, like, the ammo and everything was so few and far between. And plus, like, fighting the Big Sister, you had splices that you had to deal with as well. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't kill the splicers first and the Big Sister showed up, then it was just like, well, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
Well, because the Big Sisters, they were faster. They were stronger. Mm-hmm. They would break out of anything that would freeze them up, right? So if you did freeze them, or you knocked them off center or something like that, they would recover faster than the big mm-hmm. daddies did. And they were just more intense that way. And then on top of that, the second game brought in this other mechanic of you bringing the little sisters along. So when the little sister had to harvest Adam, you had to protect her.
Yeah.
So you were constantly being overwhelmed with groups of enemies coming right to you. Whereas mm-hmm. in the first game, you entered a room and you could kind of sometimes see where people were and plan out, okay, I'm going to shoot electricity here and knock out those guys and shoot a grenade over there and whatever. But now you can't do that. So you're setting mines and you're trying to block yourself in to protect this little sister
mm-hmm.
while just a whole, mob comes at you. And so I felt like you were just always on the edge of losing. You were always on the edge of no longer having ammo or plasmids left in you.
Right.
In the second game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It felt just a little more survival focused, I think.
It did.
Absolutely. I haven't played the first and second one in literally so long. Is the second one with Tannenbaum, or is Tannenbaum in the first?
I think she's in both, isn't she?
She is in both, but she's a main player in the first one because she's the one who sets
you up to. Yeah.
She's protecting the little sisters, right? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and okay. She helps you out like heading into the final boss fight of the first one.
Right. Yeah. So
I love Tannen.
Yeah, she's cool.
Her story.
So speaking of the little sisters, the second game also brings in the mechanic where you get to play as a little sister shortly.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And
that part of the game is one of my favorite parts of the trilogy because you get to see this drug-induced universe the little sisters are living in that is just completely fictional from mm-hmm. everything else going on around them. Everything is bright and colorful and happy mm-hmm. and clean, and they think that's how it all looks.
Right.
Did you think that's how it was for them? Because I was totally blown away by that.
Not at all. And I think I really enjoy that switch because in the first one, you see them like skipping around in this dilapidated world with like the big daddies, and you're like, what the fuck? Like, they're children, and you get it. And you're like, okay, well, maybe they have to make their own fun. But they're skipping around and they're loving, they're just so happy all the time. And it's really creepy. Especially in the first one, because you don't understand it. You're just like these children with glowing eyes and syringes are having the best time of their life right now. And then for the second one, you get to see their view. And it's very We Happy Few, if you guys have played that game or seen it.
I wanted to. I really liked the trailers and what I saw. It reminded me very much of BioShock, and then I just never got around to it.
Yeah, it's heavily influenced by BioShock. And it's just in the second game of BioShock 2, seeing the little sister's point of view. Sorry, my cat is wanting to jump off on shelves. Seeing their point of view, you're just like, okay, they're not psychotic. They're just dope the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also as we shift from gameplay to storytelling, I think it's worth noting that, like, for me at least, the first game started off really strong, and I think it's got one of the best openings of any game ever. As you descend into Rapture and you're hearing Andrew Ryan's narration of what's going on. And then, like, in the last third of the game, I don't know, like, I just wasn't as invested, and that the final fight was, I get what they were going for, but it was a little over the top. Whereas by contrast, as much as I prefer maybe BioShock 1 over 2, the second game kind of starts off slow and I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. By the time that game ends, and then when you get to the DLC especially, it's like, holy shit, this game was a slow burn and had a much stronger ending, I felt, than the first one.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I definitely think the Big Fontaine boss fight is underwhelming. And mm-hmm. maybe it has to do with how you play the game, right? I mean, if you rescue all the little sisters and you perform your upgrades well, then you're pretty set. Maybe that's the key. I mean, I went in there, I had a good amount of ammo and traps and all that type of stuff. My plasmids were good. And so it seemed pretty quick. It was actually... I don't know that it was much more difficult than taking down like the first Big Daddy.
Right.
You know?
Well, not only was it not difficult, it was super cheesy. Like, by the time you get to the end of the first game, if you're familiar with Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged, you already get the metaphor they're going for. And like, okay, like, oh, he's literally Atlas. And like, he looks like Atlas. Like, okay, like, this is like, it's almost too much at the end.
He
doesn't look good. That's the thing. That's the big problem.
He looks like Scorpion King at the end of Mummy 2.
Right.
I think for storytelling in Bioshock, like you're saying, that it starts out really strong. And I feel like after the slow reveal of Atlas and like the brainwashing of the "Would you kindly" kind of mechanism, I feel like after that it just kind of coasts. It doesn't really have anything else to offer at the end. It's just like, I feel like they played their cards and they threw them on the table and then like, we still have to finish this game.
Yeah, they give you the big plot twist like 2/3 in, and then you still have a whole world to get through.
The problem is Fontaine's just a dude, right? Yeah. And you killed Andrew Ryan with a golf club, right? Fontaine's not going to be any different. So they had to come up with some, you know, gamey way to make it a big final boss battle. But the problem is it doesn't always work from a narrative perspective.
Right.
You know, so he's kind of ridiculous and he doesn't look great and it's just not a unique fight, right? You're in an arena basically. Mm-hmm. There's ammo and things like that, and you just kind of run around avoiding his attacks until you see an opening.
And that's his attacks Andrew, aren't scary.
No, they're not. And Andrew Ryan was human. He was human, and you, at that point in the game, before you killed him, you were already fairly well indoctrinated into his philosophy. Whereas Atlas what was it? Fontaine. Yeah, like Fontaine was just a guy who had an ideal, and Atlas was his philosophy. So like when you're in that final boss fight, you're not fighting a person anymore. You're fighting an idea. You're fighting this rebellion against Andrew Ryan and his philosophy.
And the thing is, as the player though, you don't really care. Like the character Jack doesn't care about any of that.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, if you as a player listen to all of the audio logs, maybe you're semi invested, but you don't really give a shit.
I mean, you're there to save the little sisters and get the hell out of there.
Right. And honestly, the way the story is written, and the way the ending is written, the canon ending is written, that's really all you're about anyways. So like all this other stuff is just, it's just extra.
Exactly. And I feel like you mentioned the audio logs, I feel like for the first Bioshock, I feel like players didn't really care. I felt like the average gamer who wants to just get in and have fun thinks the audio logs are boring. And they're the same people that don't read a lot of the information in other games, like Last of Us. You have all of those journals that you can find throughout the world. And a lot of people just don't do it because it's tedious and they don't like to pause the game. They don't like to read. And for the audio logs, you can have them in the background playing, but you still have to listen to them. And I feel like a lot of people skip them because a lot of people aren't as invested into the bigger world. And I felt like the emphasis on the audio logs definitely became more important as the game series moved on, because I think people realized, oh, this is providing information, or this could provide different codes, or XYZ. Like, it fleshes out the world more, and I feel like people learn that from the first one, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when you get to Fontaine, if you haven't, like you said, if you haven't really give a shit about the audio logs, you will miss out on so much context that makes everything much more punchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I understand it sometimes because like my backlog is so big when it comes to video games. When I sit down, I'm like, well, this is already going to be an X number of hour game if I push through it. You know, then sometimes I will take shortcuts depending on what it is. I tried really hard not to do that for the Bioshock games. I really tried to listen to everything that I could find. But that's abnormal for me, just because I know that I'm trying to get to the next game. Sometimes that's a problem, I think, is
it
that,
is.
You know, when I was a kid and I was growing up, I would get a game for my birthday and I would get a game for Hanukkah, and that would probably be about it, right? Maybe I'd get one more during the year for something special. And I would just play those games over and over. But now I've got – just this massive backlog. I've got Xbox Game Pass and the free games that PlayStation gives away every month, and then my Steam catalog, and it's just right. I got to get to the next game. I got to get to the next.
We're almost too saturated now. So Derek, yeah. you just started playing these games. Morgan, how many times have you played these games?
I definitely played BioShock 1 like 3 times. I played BioShock 2 once because it was really hard, and I was a child, and I'm like, I don't like this. This isn't fun anymore.
Right.
But Infinite, I have played several times, and I've watched my boyfriend at the time. I'd watched him go through it because I forced him to go through it. And then I've watched different gameplays just because I enjoy the story and I like watching a lot of Let's Plays because it's like hanging out with a friend.
Yeah.
And it's just like sometimes, especially with BioShock 3, like I'm 3, Infinite, there's a lot of things you can miss, like a lot of things with the Lutesses that if you're not paying attention, it's just like over your head. And I feel like with the Lutesses, if you're not paying attention to what they're saying, and two, how they're changing the environment around you, you won't really get the impact as much in the latter part of the game because you're like, well, what? These two crazy twins are just spouting off nonsense, but they're saying things that are extraordinarily pertinent. Right. And they're like giving you like, they're basically narrating for you in their crazy bibble babble to each other, which I absolutely love.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Because like they're so eccentric, so they stick out, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this, I had an idea, I had a thought, but I can't think of it anymore.
Well, it's like the Lutesses, especially, like there's that little Easter egg even where it's like, are they twins or are they the same person from a different reality? Because BioShock Infinite touches on the different realities, and that was a fascinating discussion. But
they explain that.
Did they? It's been a year since I played the last.
So they are. Yeah, they're both an only child from different realities. Mm-hmm. So they're in one universe it was a boy, in the other universe it was a girl. Mm-hmm. So that's how that works. That's why they're so tightly connected, because they're technically the same person.
The same person.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I played these. Oh, go ahead, Derek.
No, which is really interesting. I love that. So the best part of Infinite for me is the multiverse idea. This idea, it's a concept that I've loved for a very long time. This idea of infinite possibility. Anything that could happen has happened, and there's a universe for it. I'm a really big fan of that. And hell, I wrote my first paper on that in freshman philosophy in high school. I took a philosophy class as a freshman in high school, and that's what I wrote my paper on.
That's very on brand for you, Derek.
For those who don't know, I minored in philosophy in college. And so those concepts are really interesting to me. So like the coin toss, for example, you know, it's always that same way, because it's always that same way. They've already done this. It's already happened. Right. Yeah. It's not that there isn't free will. It's that they've already seen it.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing they haven't seen. And that's why they're so flippant with things, which I really like, because at first you're like, they're assholes and they're just ignoring flippant. Me.
But they're, yes, it's because they're disconnected. They're separated from everybody else. They're kind of in their own lane.
They're very omniscient observery. And I love it, because they just sound like crazy people until like you understand. And I love that, like, it always feels like you're on the outside with them.
But on multiple replays, you start to like understand what they're saying, like especially like on subsequent times you play through it. So like, Derek, I know you just started them. Morgan, you mentioned that like you've played these a few times, but maybe Infinite more. I only played BioShock 2 the one time as well. And I played in a weird order. I played the first BioShock like maybe twice, and then BioShock 2 came out, and I I read mixed reviews and I was like, ah, fuck it, I'm not interested. But then Bioshock Infinite, like I followed that project from like inception to release and all of the multiple delays and like the different iterations and like all the pre-game footage and all that. And I was hyped. And so when Infinite came out, I got it almost immediately. And Infinite I've played the most, but it wasn't until after I played through Burial at Sea DLC, you know, episode 2, that I thought, okay, I should go back and play Bioshock 2. So I played them in a weird order, and I only played Bioshock 2 the one time. Now, it's coming out on Switch later this month, and I will be buying it, and I will play it in order this time. But I've also played Infinite more than the others. So
just to throw this out there, according to Metacritic, these are the scores for the three games in order.
Okay.
The original got a 96.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The second one got an 88. Yeah. And Infinite got a 94.
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh. Now, I don't think that includes DLC. I think that's just the base game, technically.
See, but even just the base game, like, I remember when it came out, a lot of people didn't get it. It was a weird game. Like, a lot of people didn't resonate with it. Like, they wanted Bioshock, and they were attached to what Bioshock should look like, and they weren't expecting what they got. I also think that, again, I mentioned this earlier, but it came out when the Tea Party was in, like, the height of their influence over the GOP. And I don't know if you guys remember this. But so there is, so, you know, Bioshock Infinite is a criticism in parts of racism. And there's a scene where they have some very obviously offensive Asian American, offensively portrayed Asian.
Yes.
But it's intentionally done so as a reflection of society. And there was a big mural that had like Asians fighting in the background. And like, it was like the racial stereotypes were awful. And they had like a John Brown type figure, and like the whole thing was a mess. And right around the time this game came out, there was a Fox News story that used that image in the background of one of their news stories. And like Ken Levine even commented, he's like,
oh, shit.
I don't think these people realize that we like designed this as satire at all.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people just didn't get to the point that's the Bioshock Infinite was trying to make. Like,
well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I bet you that those people definitely exist. But for me, the problems that I had with Infinite until you finish it, and that's the problem, is you have to finish it, is that it's exactly like Bioshock, but different. And the but different part doesn't really make sense until you finish the game. So it's like, okay, well, it's not, you know, you don't have the same abilities, right? It's not plasmids, it's vigors, and they're named different things. And you're like, well, that seems kind of silly. It's the same mechanic. Why not just name it the same thing? And then it's like, oh, yeah. It feels like they were being different just to not use the same terminology, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then you can't save when you want to. It auto saves for you when it feels like it. The areas are smaller.
Which, as a side note, that autosave feature really sucks when you're playing on the hardest difficulty, which I did once and only once.
Well, for me, I like to play most games I play are games that I can pause, with very few exceptions. And the idea that I couldn't just pause and save it whenever I wanted to, when the previous two games let you do that, seemed kind of annoying. Now, there's probably an architectural reason for that. The game is significantly larger. It
has a lot more moving assets as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that that's a piece of it. I mean, that's why when you get the Bioshock collection on PS4, it's two different downloads, one for the first two games and one for the third game. Mm-hmm. And I think it was different in weird ways for people. And if you don't finish the game, most of those ways are never really explained. I think that's why
didn't
care for it.
And I do feel like maybe people thought Bioshock Infinite was too on the nose with their like satire of like racism and government. Because when I played it, I loved it because as a minority who is, I think I was a senior in high school. If not, it was a summer between high school and college, like senior year in college. But as someone who has lived with with racism and a lot of games kind of glossing over it, it was really satisfying to be like, oh my gosh, they get it. And they're like, it's satire, yes, and a lot of people were kind of offended. However, it was just, it was obviously satire to me. And I feel like a lot of people don't like their, especially now, don't like their entertainment content having political overtones, because they're like, we don't like government, we don't want games preaching to us. However,
don't make me think.
Exactly. And it's especially with, I mean, the BioShock games are very philosophical and they make you think, but I feel like Infinite kind of pushed your face in it in a way that the prior two hadn't, because now that you're talking about time travel and the idea of free will versus set timelines and how different you can be, and then slavery and racism against Asian Americans, like you're just having so many lofty concepts that really matter. And I think a lot of people didn't like their face being pushed in it as much as Infinite did. Sure. And I loved it because I like people kind of shining a light on a lot of racism and cultural and societal issues. However, people who don't hate it.
Yeah. Well, and Ken Levine is a big proponent of video games as an art form. And like, he's written a lot about how that they're an art form. And if you ever asked him in an interview, like, you know, what's the meaning behind BioShock or what's the meaning behind Infinite? Like, he referred to his games numerous times as a Rorschach test. Like, what do you see? Like, he would deflect on you. Like, what do you see in this? Like, you know, how do you view this? And that, I believe that the discussion of it all is fascinating.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because so I'm my family's Jewish, and I was brought up in a very Christian area of the world. And I've been an atheist since I was 14, but I was brought up Jewish. And when people found out I was Jewish, that usually didn't go over super well. And so when I play Infinite, there's so many religious overtones that, especially early on in the game, that like, it's a lot of eye rolling for me, because I don't like that stuff in my face, because it's just frustrating for me because of all of my previous experiences. So I like getting past all of that. And then when you get to the multiple universes and the timelines and time travel and the tears and all this other stuff, now you have my attention. Right. Cause now it's all sci-fi cool stuff. And now you've got me, let's do this. But it's rare that a game or a TV show or a movie, for that matter, tackles religion in a way that I'm interested, if that makes sense. It's usually
total sense, yeah.
It's usually a big turnoff, and that's a big departure, because the first two games completely ignore religion.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they're so antithetical to each other. The first one is like the opposite, like no gods, no kings, just man. So there's no religion, there's no government. It's very it's Ayn Rand, it's Atlas Shrugged. It's there's no government, there's no religion. Like, no one's gonna tell us what we can do. Whereas in Infinite, it's like, okay, God and the government, like these are holy ordained structures of our society, and that we're gonna adhere to what they say.
And I mean, there are a few visual elements that I think maybe are a little silly, like the George Washington robots. Don't get me wrong, like I understand the point being made about how we romanticize our historical figures in very inaccurate ways. Mm-hmm. I'm totally on board with all of that. But like the George Washington robot, I'm a little like, okay.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why it's the statement that you have to kill your darlings. And maybe at the point where when that game came out, not enough people were willing to kill the George Washington darling that has been a staple in American society for so long.
See, like, for me, I'm just unnerving. Like,
it was cheesy and unnerving at the same time.
See, that's the thing. It was never unnerving to me. It was just a George Washington robot. And so I just thought it was silly.
Right.
I think I have a very unique opinion about like that whole imagery, because as, like I said, a Black woman in America, I feel like a lot of the historical figures are very problematic, obviously. And so it was very almost symbolic of, like, now these historical figures, these founding fathers that everyone just adores, is killing you. And I feel like for me, it felt like they were shining a light on the history of, like, America wasn't built for people of minority, for women. It was built for men, and anyone different, like white men and anyone different, they were killed. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's kind of what I got out of it, of like, you're different, you're acting out, therefore we're going to kill you because you don't fit into quote unquote our America.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, Morgan, because I wanted your unique perspective on Daisy Fitzroy as a character.
I really wanted to like her. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the idea and I like her and I want to cosplay her because, yes.
Yeah, of course.
But I also kind of feel like they villainized her in a way that, instead of empowering her and her revolution, just kind of killed it. Like at the end where she is like telling Booker to choose, mm-hmm. and she just like kills people anyway, like the kid, it's just kind of like, well, like I get her point. It just kind of seems like they had this strong figure and they were doing this really powerful thing. And then they're like, ooh, I'm afraid of what this message is going to send, so let's do this.
Right.
Which then is a little frustrating.
She ends up just kind of being a pawn anyway when it's all said and done.
Which is disappointing.
Which kind of undercuts any point she was going to make.
Right.
Exactly.
Which, like, but didn't that transition happen? Because there was this big shift in BioShock Infinite where everything's going a certain way, and then Booker chooses to kind of fuck with the timeline and jump through, and then, like, he comes back through, and then, like, the inventor is dead, and then Daisy Fitzroy's revolution is a bit more,
Well, it's not a time jump. He goes into a different reality.
Right, yeah, not a time jump, but an alternate reality jump is what I meant. So, like, I felt like Daisy Fitzroy, like, she was played up as this very honorable character, which would have been really cool to see that version. But then Booker jumps into this other reality where she's kind of just as villainous as what's his name?
Zachary.
It's Zachary Comstock. We have the same first name, but we're nothing alike.
Yeah.
Comstock / Booker DeWitt. They're the same person.
Yeah.
Or
and I
are
feel
they?
Like it just kind
oh,
of.
Oh, I think they are.
Sorry, Morgan.
No, you're fine. With him jumping through to another reality, I feel like they kind of land on the trope of all of how, like, media portrays, like, Black revolutionary leaders, where, like, oh, they're saying all these great things, but look, they're really villains. They're really criminals. They're killing people. And I think that's what was really frustrating about it, because they couldn't have this Black revolutionary be great. They had to kind of twist the knife a bit and be like, oh, look at this, which, like, really frustrated me, because you see that with Martin Luther King, you see that with Malcolm X, and the list goes on about people in media kind of twisting the efforts of Black people and minorities when they're trying to get more rights and to showing the more villainous aspects of their behavior, which was frustrating to me.
Shit, Black people can't even run without getting shot down. And
exactly. And it actually is a really interesting oh my gosh, I can't think of words today. I'm so sorry. The Vox Populi and the Fireflies in Last of Us are very similar, and they ironically both have Troy Baker in them as the lead.
Yes.
And I remember Infinite came out before Last of Us, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
you got that right.
And I remember playing Last of Us and being like, right? This is...
I think so.
Because the Last of Us came out on PS3, right?
Infinite came out on PS3 as well. Right.
Yeah, they both did. I'm trying to remember when the first one came out.
I know. Okay. Last of Us came out, you're right.
2014. Sorry.
Yeah, because I know Last of Us came out when, like, the tail end of PS3 moving into PS4. But I remember playing Last of Us and being like, this is very Vox Populi, especially with Marlene being the leader of the Fireflies. And I feel like their stories and their messages are very similar, which I just think is interesting.
Yeah, and they were both in development at the same time, so it's possible people were having conversations and just ideas floated across.
Yeah.
Now, we've kind of gone a little bit longer than I had originally intended, so I want to start wrapping things up. So, of course, like, the whole trilogy wraps up in this idea that all of this, there's all these possibilities and all these universes where things happen. And in order for things to really be right, the Bookers, the Comstocks, the DeWitts, whatever, they all have to be stopped. So Elizabeth has, you know, she's basically made it, this one Elizabeth, this special Elizabeth, has made it her mission to take them all down. One of my favorite parts of the franchise is when you get to play as her in the DLC.
Yes.
I always like when games let you play as one of the other characters, because you usually have a different skill set, or even sometimes you're more vulnerable. That's why, like, Halo ODST is probably one of my favorite Halo games, because it brings back, like, health packs.
Same.
And you're not like a super soldier, you know? Or like in BioShock 2, when you get to play as the little sister, I like that kind of mix up. And, you know, she's got some cool abilities. She's got the cool, the grapple gun thing she gets to use and all that.
She has the peeping Tom,
right?
Plasmids, which is OP as fuck.
Super cool though.
Just awesome.
Yeah.
So that personally was one of the highlights of Infinite for me, even though it was in the DLC. But how do you guys feel about the way the story wraps up, ties back into the original? Are there things you really liked, or anything you would have preferred was different?
Zach, you go first.
No, like I love these games. I've replayed them a number of times, not the second one. I know. Well, and here's the thing, like I've also bought these games a number of times. I first played them on the Xbox 360, or no. Yeah, it was the Xbox 360. And then I played them again on the Xbox One. I played them on PS4. I am going to be buying them later this month. And I'm probably going to buy the digital version, just because I know the games I replay often enough. And I don't want to switch out the Animal Crossing card just to play some BioShock. It's a real struggle. But no, these are games that I love and have revisited numerous times. I think, especially from our conversation, I think, I won't speak for Morgan, but like, to Derek's point and Morgan's points that you guys have both made, like, I think maybe I appreciate BioShock Infinite more because I've played it so many times and it's a story that I've kind of relished in. But yeah, I do have plans to go through them again and play, you know, in order. And I think, you know, including DLC especially, it's a very cyclical journey that's not, I don't know. Like, yeah, I've got complaints. I've got minor complaints, but nothing major, nothing that, like, makes me love this franchise less and keeps me from, like, revisiting it. It's definitely a comfort thing for me, like, to, like, return to Rapture and or Columbia and these, you know, idealistically imposed or opposed worlds that... That forced me to think and examine the world around me. And I appreciate that about these games. And that's something that I will continue to go back to.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. We both said I played Infinite more, maybe because I was older when Infinite came out and I appreciated it more and I had more, like, special memories with it. Then the other two, I have special memories with them as well. I don't think there is anything that I think I love it more, Infinite more, because one, Troy Baker is one of my favorite people ever. I love him as a voice actor. I love him as a person. I hate that he named his child Traveler. I think it's dumb, but anyway.
Oh, man.
I had not heard that.
Called yeah, out.
His son's name is Traveler. Cute boy, but anyway.
It's better than Elon Musk's child.
That is true. I really enjoy the dynamics that these games pose. And like Zach said earlier, that it's basically like boils down to father and daughter kind of roles. And I really enjoy that because you feel, especially in Infinite, you're with Booker and Elizabeth the entire time. And you really feel for these characters and you really want to see them prosper. And like, you just kind of feel Elizabeth's trapped feeling of that she always has. She's like, she's a bird in a cage, obviously. And she starts out so innocent, and this like the slow descent that she has is almost kind of like when you, I mean, I don't have children, but like when you see your kids grow up, when you see someone grow up, you kind of see their life kind of not take a darker role, but you see the things that hurt them and you see them change because of that. And I really like that kind of shift these games have of like bringing you back to the basic like emotions of like fear, love, sadness, and anger. And it's just kind of raises the bar and kind of quite like makes you question everything, which I really, really enjoy.
Well, I echo what you guys are saying. I love the wraparound story that it's all tied together, that Elizabeth kind of has to put it all into motion. Her character is a wonderful addition to the trilogy, because there just aren't a lot of likable characters.
Yeah.
You know, and she's,
there's also not a lot of likable, like, sidekick characters in video games that aren't annoying. Like they put a lot of, like, they put a lot of hard work into Infinite to not make her annoying.
Yeah.
No, she's really cool. And I appreciated that. I'm just going to give a shout out to the second game and say that it doesn't deserve the hate. There's some really cool content in there.
It's a good game.
I think the story is really powerful, especially for anybody who is a parent or wants to be one. I think that there's some powerful stuff in there. And there's some really cool evolutions of the first game with the big sisters and with being able to play as a little sister for a short time. It expands on that universe really well. And I think it's just kind of looked over a bit because it's not incredibly different from the first game, and obviously Infinite is, and I think those two are stark contrasts, and the second one kind of gets lost.
But the whole trilogy is valid, and each chapter contributes something unique to that franchise that is worth noting.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
So, like Zach was saying, the BioShock Collection, all three games, including all the DLC, lands on Switch May 29th. 2020 here, so you'll be able to get that. I don't have a price for you. I looked to try and find it, and I can't find a price. I'm assuming it's going to be $59.99 because that's just with the cartridge costs and stuff. It seems to be what they're doing. But
yeah,
welcome to the circus of value.
I mean, look, the reality is there is a lot of other stuff I was hoping to touch on, like technology, aesthetic, music, all those types of things that we didn't get to.
Infinite alone, like, well, had some of the best uses of music.
So what I'm going to say is I think maybe we'll have to revisit this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to talk more about like Elizabeth's character and like the women in BioShock.
Yeah.
So then I think that's what we need to do, is have a part two, maybe even a part three, and just dive deeper into some of these other areas. Now that we've kind of done a general conversation, because we got to wrap things up, unfortunately. So in order to do that, we'll have you guys say your goodbyes. Zach, if people want to reach out to you and talk BioShock or Animal Crossing or whatever, how would people do that?
I am at AvengerZS on Instagram and Twitter.
And Morgan, if people want to see your cosplay or your modeling or whatever, how might they do that?
I have two Instagrams. I have one for cosplay. It is morgan.volpe. And then I have the other one for modeling, and that's morgan_simone_official. And I always love talking anything, so...
Cool. And I'll put everybody's handles and stuff in the show notes, along with a link to the BioShock collection stuff. So you guys can check that out if you're interested in it. Thank you both for coming on and being my first guests on the revival of the Gamer Heroes podcast. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, no problem at all. We'll have you both back, I'm sure, multiple times. So thank you guys very much. And that's it for the interview. So we'll talk to you guys later. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week on the Gamer Heroes podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am Derek. Thank you so much for joining us, especially making it to the end of the episode here. I'm really excited to have Gamer Heroes back in action and to be back hosting it. We will be back in 2 weeks. Remember, this is a bi-weekly show. I will have a new guest on, and we will be talking about Animal Crossing New Horizons for the Nintendo Switch. And then the episode after that, I will have even more guests on the show, as we will be talking about Fallout 76, Wastelanders, as well as the Fallout franchise as a whole and where 76 fits in with it. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Game on. Gamer Heroes is produced by the Heroes Podcast Network and hosted by me, Derek Mayer. Follow me at The Star Trek Dude on Twitter. You can subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Gamer Heroes Pod or Facebook and Instagram at Heroes Podcasts. Stream our latest episodes and catch other HPN shows on our website, heroespodcasts.com. Game on.